Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. 2019 is the third year in office for North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, but thanks to last November's election, which ended years of Republican supermajorities at the General Assembly, it's the first year in which he's been in a position to negotiate on something close to even terms with legislative leaders over the state budget bill. Recently, Cooper's top expert and spokesperson in this area, State Budget Director Charles Peruse, joined me in studio to discuss the governor's spending priorities as he enters these negotiations, and the state's desperate need for more dollars to preserve and upgrade its public school facilities. Charles Peruse, welcome to News and Views.
Glad to be here.
This is a big topic we've got to talk about today. It's the budget of North Carolina, which is your job, basically, to manage the state budget of North Carolina, to be the person who knows it inside and out better than anybody else. Governor Cooper has proposed a budget for 2019-21 that's entitled Investments for a Determined North Carolina. That's what we're calling it. I went to the initial presentation in which you presented an overview of the budget. And one of the things you talked about was sort of where we are as a state even coming into proposing this budget and some of the real fiscal challenges we confront as a state in North Carolina, partially because of all the tax cuts we've implemented over the last several years. And that makes our challenges even greater than they might ordinarily be.
But the good thing is we're starting from a position of stability.
Right.
The economy is strong. Our unemployment rate is at the lowest it's been since 2000. And so the pillars are strong. But our challenges are many. You know, we have a growing state. We're 10.4 million people, the third fastest growing state in the country. We grow about 120,000 people a year, which is equivalent to growing a city of Wilmington every year. So when you're growing that fast, you got to have the resources to provide basic services to state government. And so in looking at the budget, Governor Cooper has a very clear vision statement. He wants a better educated, healthier North Carolina where people have more money in their pockets and have an opportunity to live a full and abundant life. That makes our job a little bit easier because we take that vision statement and what does it mean in budget and investing in the people of North Carolina? In the governor's mind, it means additional investments in education, access to quality health care, and rural economic development. And I think all three of those areas are intertwined with one another.
Yeah, they pretty clearly are. And obviously, education is always the biggest item in the state budget every year. It's where we spend more money than any place. It is true, though, that per pupil spending's been down for several years in North Carolina. Y'all have inherited a situation. Governor Cooper, of course, took office in 2017, but you've all inherited a situation in which we've had a lot of cuts to education, a lot of cuts to personnel, as we say, per pupil spending down. You've had to sort of rebuild a little bit. We made some progress in the past budget in getting teacher salaries up a little bit. You all have made some rather bold proposals to take teacher salaries to a higher level, get them really tops in the Southeast, if possible. Am I right about that?
That's correct. And you're right. During the recession, unfortunately, education funding across all sectors, we talk mostly about public schools, but as well as universities and community colleges, when you look at per student spending and control that for inflation, we've fallen behind some. But I think in the last couple of years in the governor's budget and working together with the legislature, we're trying to chip away at those declines that came about after the recession and being thoughtful in the investments that we make in education. At the end of the day, it's about having more people educated, more people with a credential so they can get to the workforce faster and make more money and grow the middle class again.
Yeah.
And so in the governor's budget, you know, that means additional money in the public schools for teacher salaries, school support positions for psychologists, counselors, and other people that can help students be better students in the classroom, but also improve school safety. It means workforce investments in the community colleges. In the governor's budget, he recommended, again, a free community college for areas where there's a clear job need, like construction, information technology, and healthcare. And in the university system, it means targeted investments to improve persistence and graduation rates and to get students into the workforce faster. And so there's a couple hundred million dollars in investments in those areas. And in the governor's budget, He was thinking for the long term, that we can't make it all up in 1 year,
right. But
we got to do it over 2, 3, or 4 years. But what also can we find common ground with at the legislature?
Right.
You know, where are areas where we can find common ground? And so that was the approach that he took.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the reality is that you have a General Assembly that while it is the Republican majority is narrower than it's been in the past, they obviously bring a different point of view to a lot of these issues. And it's not always been a real loving, friendly relationship that you've all had with. It's been a lot of highly critical comments made from the General Assembly, but it seems as if you all are taking the high road, as best I can tell. You're continuing to try to find common ground with the leaders of the General Assembly. You all haven't sort of replied in kind with critical comments about the budgets that the General Assembly puts forth, and you're still trying to find common ground. And that's going to have to happen here in the coming weeks and months as the budget's put together, because obviously the governor has a bigger say than he used to have on how this gets done with the smaller Republican majorities.
You're absolutely right. You know, at the end of the day, 10.4 million citizens are counting on government to work for them. In the governor's budget, we took that approach. We know in the governor's budget that he's going to be the high water mark in spending in all of these areas. And so, in starting with that blueprint for his vision of the future, but also structuring it in a way that we can find common ground with the House and Senate in many areas. And as we work through the budget process, I sort of start with the end in mind, as the governor does, is how do we put the best foot forward in his budget for a brighter future for North Carolina? But how can we also get to agreement with the House and the Senate come June and July? Because that's what the people are counting on. This isn't Washington. We have to have a budget, a balanced budget, and we're going to do better.
You know, we've talked about education, and obviously a critically important area in education is investment in sort of the infrastructure of our public education system. Y'all have made a proposal. We've had studies that have shown we have something upwards of $8 billion in need for infrastructure improvements to our education system. Nobody's proposing anything like that, but y'all have made a fairly bold bond proposal. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that and sort of where some of that money would go and why you think that would be an important thing for the General Assembly to address.
Absolutely. It's a hallmark and a formative recommendation in the governor's budget. He proposes a $3.9 billion vote of the people bond. $3 billion of that would go to education, $2 billion to public schools, and $500 million each to community colleges and UNC. To dive deeper in the public school area, we haven't had a state bond for public schools since 1996. It's been over 20 years
almost a quarter century.
Yes. And as you mentioned, we have $8 billion in identified needs in the public school system statewide and construction needs. This is a statistic that we're not real proud of. Over 40% of our school buildings are 50 years or older. You know, the times have changed. You know, you need an updated classroom to ensure students have a quality place to go to class where they're safe and where they can learn better. In the governor's mind, you know, a bond was the best way to go at it because it provides certainty to local school districts that this is the amount they're going to have to do large-scale renovations or to build new schools. We're still a low-debt state. Interest rates are still in the 3% range.
You get the money, and you get it fast. You get it going rather than
absolutely
dribbing and drabbing it
absolutely
out.
It just makes sense to go out with a bond at this time, you know, given where we are in the economy and low interest rates. In addition to that, we're real proud of the $800 million in bond that he recommends in his budget for water sewer upgrades. This is something really important for our small rural counties in cities where they have degrading water systems. What's unique about the governor's proposal is a big part of it puts emphasis on regional approaches to water sewer, where we can get small water sewer districts to come together on a regional approach. It also puts in money for vitality grants. Ultimately, the success of some of these rural water sewer systems is to get them to where large cities want to take them over. But a large city or county is not going to want to take them over if they're not financially stable or they're degrading. And so these vitality grants can go to these small systems to get them to a place where a large city like Raleigh or Charlotte might take them over. That's an innovative approach that we're taking in the governor's budget, and we've heard a lot of people at the legislature real excited about this plan.
It would seem that the whole water and sewer infrastructure would be especially important, and this probably touches on another subject, which is, you know, we're living in a time of climate change and increased, you know, storm potential, hurricanes. We know it's essentially become a permanent part of state government now. Governor Cooper's indeed made it that, you know, have a permanent capacity to respond to storms. And it would seem just pretty much a no-brainer that you're going to have to think smarter about how you build infrastructure, how you maintain it, how you develop it, if we're going to be able to survive throughout the 21st century without, you know, really putting ourselves behind the eight ball.
You're absolutely right. You use the same words that the governor has said many times to me. Charlie, we have to rebuild stronger and smarter.
Mm-hmm.
The water sewer bond grants are part of that thought process, as well as some of the recommendations that he put forward in his Hurricane Florence recovery package. Is it wasn't just rebuilding to where it is, but rebuild smarter. And so with that, you have to have resiliency plans in place for transportation infrastructure and water sewer infrastructure. This is a collaborative approach between state government and the federal government to rebuild smarter. And so that's at the forefront of our minds.
We talked a lot about education. A couple other items I thought were worth mentioning. I found it very appealing that in the budget there were some very sort of practical, specific things that y'all recommended that they seem like no-brainers to me, and it's sort of remarkable that y'all even have to go to the trouble of this. But you had like a proposal to do away with the requirement that teachers pay for their own substitutes when they take a personal leave day, and making it so that poor kids no longer have to pay part of the cost of their school breakfasts. How do those kinds of proposals crop up, and how do you decide these are ones we want to highlight in the budget?
Sometimes a small amount of money can make a big impact.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, Rob, a lot of times it's about common sense and doing the right thing. And so those recommendations are part of that, you know, and the teachers paying for their own substitutes is downright disrespectful to them. And so to us, it seemed to be a no-brainer, as well as reinstituting master's pay for teachers who get a master's degree. It's about respecting the profession, treating them like professionals. It's never wrong to do the right thing.
A huge issue that we haven't even touched on yet that maybe some would say is the most important public policy issue before the state of North Carolina in 2019 revolves around health care and the need to close the health care coverage gap in our state, where we've got hundreds of thousands of people because of the General Assembly's ongoing refusal to work with the Affordable Care Act who are without health insurance. These are mostly working people but can't afford to be in the private health care system. The governor's made it pretty clear he wants that changed.
To the governor and to many of us, this is a no-brainer on so many fronts. 37 other states have already expanded Medicaid. You have an immediate ability to get access to quality health care to over 500,000 additional North Carolinians. It infuses $4 billion into the economy, creates 40,000 jobs. Our tax dollars are already going to other states to expand Medicaid. The federal government pays 90% of this expansion. And it helps rural hospitals as well.
Didn't you all have an event on this recently where you brought some rural hospitals together to talk about this?
Absolutely. And it allows us to have a healthier population. So with all the econometrics behind it, a healthier population, it's just a no-brainer to the governor and to many of us why we wouldn't expand Medicaid. It's the right thing to do. Now is the time to do it. And we got to figure out a way to work with the General Assembly to get it done.
Some members of the Republican Party have proposed their own sort of version of this. They're loath to call it Medicaid expansion, but it's essentially what they're proposing. But that's going to require some compromises, it would appear. There are people who are on the progressive side of the ledger who are a little concerned about how far those compromises might go in terms of implementing work requirements and other things that they've seen in other states that have actually been harmful to folks. How do you go about those negotiations?
It's all
step by step,
and it's part of a larger puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, as you work together with the House and Senate, you know, there's probably going to be 5 to 6 large, big issues that we're going to be working together with them on, and it's the art of discussion, listening, and compromise.
Right.
And so that's what we've got to do. But in the governor's mind, Medicaid expansion and providing access to quality health care for 500,000 individuals has to happen this session.
Does your gut tell you it'll happen this year, do you think?
We hope so, and we're going to do everything we can to make it happen.
You've talked about giving raises to teachers, of course, and that's been an issue that's been high on the public agenda for a while. But we have hundreds of thousands of state employees in North Carolina who are not teachers who also do incredibly important work, and they obviously need to be compensated in some fashion better than they are right now as well.
Absolutely. I think the governor's budget proposal here is the largest compensation increase for state employees in 10 years. For the first time in my career, and I've been in this business 25 plus years, The governor included a two-year increase for state employees. Mm-hmm. So it's an increase in the first year and the second year of the budget, 1.5% or $500, whichever is greater. And then an additional $500 for law enforcement and individuals who work in mental health institutions or the prison system or probation and parole officers. So in the governor's budget, some employees could get a $1,500 increase over 2 years, which for some folks in the $40,000 range is a 5% increase over 2 years, which is substantial given the limited raises that have been available over the last 10 years. And in thinking about this, you know, we talk at the forefront about investing in our people and believing in a brighter future. You know, at the end of the day, 72 out of 100 counties, the largest employer in those counties is government. And so when you invest in government through compensation or better services, you're also investing in our economy.
One area of our state infrastructure that's really been challenged in recent years is our mental health system. And you mentioned the prisons as well, which in effect often become our de facto mental health system. Do you have any hope that we're going to get to a point in North Carolina in the coming years where we don't have this almost sense of crisis that continues to sort of plague our institutions of mental health and indeed corrections as well? How do we get to a better place in that area? It's obviously a long-term objective.
It is a long-term, and we wish we had... could just snap our fingers and fix it right away. But, you know, in the governor's budget, I think we took a three-pronged approach with working with Secretary Cohen and her team at HHS is obviously additional investments to deal with the opioid crisis, additional investments to ensure we have sufficient staff in our mental health institutions. And then thirdly, to make sure that we have good infrastructure. And so, you know, we've taken that approach to invest in each of those areas. But it's a long-term problem that we're facing, and we're trying to make incremental progress as we move forward.
You have a new challenge in that area, which is we have this raise the age law, which is going to add more expense. I mean, it's an important advance from North Carolina joining all the other states by saying we're not going to automatically treat children as adults, but it's going to impose even more expenses on you for your justice staff, right?
That's correct. And it's, you know, it's not just investments in institutional staff. It's investments in probation, parole, and juvenile court counselors. And it's also investments in community programs to try to help reduce the problem moving forward. It's not just dealing with the immediate, but having those community programs in place to reduce these problems going forward. So it's a long-term approach here.
Our time is limited, but I do want to hit on one other topic. In the past, the governor's talked about maybe we need to raise taxes on millionaires to find more funding for public structures and services. I mean, the reality remains, as I know you're well aware, that in North Carolina, when you look at total personal income in the state, we're actually spending much less than we historically have on state and local government. So there are some, of course, progressive critics who say, my gosh, we've got a tax structure that is definitely tilted in favor of the rich and to profitable corporations. It's gone even more in that direction in recent years. Is there any thought, at least in perhaps in the long term, of looking at the tax structure and trying to make it more robust and perhaps somewhat fairer towards people in the middle and the bottom?
I think this is going to continue to be an ongoing issue. The governor's budget took many Republican leaders by surprise by not including, you know, any additional tax increases.
They didn't know what to do. They were all set to attack it, and then they didn't have that fuel.
I think many of them were in the governor's budget. You know, we took approach that, you know, we're working within the environment that we have. Yeah. As well as trying to halt additional deterioration to the general fund operating budget. So, you know, we would anticipate the House and Senate might look at additional tax cuts, you know, moving forward. I think that versus meeting the needs of a growing state is something that we're going to be paying attention to as we work through the process. But this is all trying to work together in sort of the art of compromise. Sure. And, you know, over the next couple of months, I think long term, it's something that we're going to have to really pay closer attention to. You know, over the last 8 years, our tax structure has been cut by 15%. In a growing state and inflation, you got to make sure you have sufficient money to meet just inflation and the growing needs of a state before you start those targeted investments that we talked about earlier. So it's definitely something that we're going to be working together on over the next couple of years.
Well, we wish you all the best with that. We hope you're girded for battle and ready to go. You've got a lot of work ahead of you. Thank you. You've been one of the most important behind-the-scenes leaders in our state for a couple decades now, and I think most North Carolinians may not be aware of that, but if they did know, they'd really be appreciative of the work you do for us. Thank you so much. Please hang in there and keep doing good work for our state.
Thank you very much. I love my state.
Coming up next, a chat with two of North Carolina's most important advocates for mental health reform. Don't go away.